the very basic thing we can do every morning is to drop into our hearts, listen to the rhythm of our heart, and then make conscious decisions based on love.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch. Today, we welcome Joseph Holmes to the show. Joseph is an Amazon International best-selling author and grandmaster of Kenshin Kan Karate. Today, we're going to discuss his latest book and also his history of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse, and how by allowing angel intervention in his life, he has been able to lead a happy and successful life free from alcohol and drug addiction. Joseph, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you, Omar?
Great. No, thanks for being on the show. Just let the audience know we had a little bit of technical difficulties, but we're ready to rock and roll. So thanks for calling in. Your line sounds good.
All right. Are we going to take any questions today?
Possible. We have a couple callers call in, but depending on how we go through the show, we'll definitely be going through it.
Okay, great.
Seeing how far we get into it. But listen, Joseph,
sure.
Tell us about, your story, definitely about this book that you've written, just basically a little bit about how you came to write this particular book.
Sure. The book is called The Power of Angels. And the reason I titled it that is because it was because of angel interventions that basically, I think, saved me from going really downhill. In 1990, I suffered a nervous breakdown, lost my business, lost my income. And, I live on a ranch, a 5-acre ranch. So I think it was because of that I was able, just for a couple of years, get back to farming and heal myself working on the land. But I think looking back at it, Steve Jobs says, if you've heard his commencement speech, he says it's hard to connect the dots when you're in the midst of things, but you can look back and it's easy to connect the dots. And that's what I've done. And looking back, the nervous breakdown and losing my business was actually a blessing for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I, as part of my healing, I took this 1-week workshop and I, wanted to work on healing myself, no other agenda. And the workshop started on a Sunday. That Wednesday evening, we were in a deep breathing exercise and I had a vision of Mother Mary, and she showered me with white and gold light for, it's hard to say, but I would say 15, 20 minutes. And then she disappeared and I didn't feel any different. So I was a little confused as to what this meant, but I figured it must have been a blessing. Well, 2 nights later, I had an out of body experience where I went into these light regions, and for 6 months, I was in the state of, we don't have the syntax in our language to describe these things, but it was like I was just in a state of rapture. I was just, I'm a kind of a quiet guy, and I'd be in a supermarket and just without warning, out of the blue, just this laughter would just escape from me. People would look at me. And so I was in this state for about 6 months, and then I came out of it. And then a few years went by, and I was thinking, well, maybe I wonder if there's a way for me to have another vision of Mother Mary. So they were giving this breathing workshop at the Mission San Luis Rey in Oceanside, California. It's one of the 21 California missions. It's my favorite mission. And because it was being done at that mission, that's the only reason I took this workshop, thinking perhaps I could have another vision of Mary. And I was closing up my office, and one of my students' parents came up to me and they asked me, well, why are you taking the workshop? And Omar, without thinking. Just out of my mouth came, oh, to meet Mary Magdalene. So I'm driving home and I'm thinking, Mary Magdalene? I have no desire to meet her. I'm going there to meet Mary. I wonder why I told her Mary Magdalene. Well, anyway, the following Saturday morning, they decided to have a breathwork session. And, you know, my ego, my monkey mind, thought if I was going to see Mary again, it was going to have to be like under the same conditions, you know, at night with the lights out, dark in the room. Well, this was the first thing in the morning around 8 a.m. and the lights were on. And they said, and we're going to do this sitting up in a chair. So, you know, my monkey mind saying, oh, no. There's no way I'm going to be able to see her if we do it this way. But, you know, I was a good trooper. I went along with everything. And so after a few minutes in the chair, through the door comes Mary, but she's got somebody with her. And they got these long black capes on, and they, you know, they swish over to me, and they start giggling and having fun and wrapping and circling me and wrapping me in these black capes and, you know, just being, having a good time. And well, the person with her was Mary Magdalene. And Omar, at the exact same time that Mary said, I want you to go to the floor and lie down, the facilitator said, okay, everyone to the floor. So I laid on the floor on my back, and my head was in Mary's lap, and Mary Magdalene was hovering above me. And she, Mary Magdalene came in, just kind of entered my body, and she healed me of my molestation, my childhood molestations, not completely, but to the point where I could start talking about them. I had never told anybody about my molestations up to that point. And I was in my 40s at that time. So from that point on, I could start writing about the molestations, talking about them freely, and so on. Well, over the next few years, Mary Magdalene kind of off and on. And then in December of 2013, she woke me up at 2 a.m. She had me come to my desk in my office and sit down in front of a legal yellow pad with a pen. It wasn't automatic writing. I would call it more of a transcription. I was just transcribing these. And we came to call them love notes for your soul. Originally, we called them love notes from Maggie. And the reason we did that, once she started sending these love notes to me, she asked me one morning, she said, can I call you Joseph, which is my middle name? And I said, well, sure, you know, but would you mind if I called you Maggie? And I said, I know Maggie's not a nickname for Magdalena, but I've always liked that name. And would you mind if I called you Maggie? And she said, no, of course not. So she started calling me Joseph. I started calling her Maggie. And every night, every morning, 2 a.m., she'd wake me up and these love notes would come through me. Well, in March of the next year, so that's December, about 3 months later, I started having doubts. You know, the ego comes in, right, and the monkey mind. And, you know, I started thinking, oh, come on now. You know, these aren't coming from Mary Magdalene. Are you nuts? People are going to think you're crazy, you know. So the next morning, I told her, I said, I need to have a sign. I said, I need to have a burning bush, you know, nothing nebulous. It has to be concrete, irrefutable. I need a burning bush to tell me that these are really coming from you. Well, you know, a day went by and nothing happened. A week went by, nothing happened. A month went by, nothing happened. And I kind of forgot about it, but the love notes kept coming through me every morning. So in July of that year, she tells me, I want you to publish these. So I'm thinking, okay, if I'm going to publish these, I better get somebody to read some of these and get, you know, and see how they like them and maybe get a testimonial. And I didn't want my relatives or friends to do it because, you know, they'd only say something nice. I wanted honest feedback. So I went onto the site. It has thousands of people who just do different things for you and technology stuff and whatever. And I'm a visual person, so, and I didn't want to take the time to read through everybody's description. So I just kind of went through the pictures. And I just went through. And then finally, I saw a photo of a lady that made me stop. And the only information on there, besides what the service she provided, was her name was Angelina. So I contacted her, and I didn't tell her anything. I just told her, I have some poems I'd like you to read, and I'll pay you to read them. I won't pay you for a testimonial. I'll pay you for your time to read them, and if you like them, if you would be so kind as to give me a testimonial, I'd appreciate it. So she wrote back and she said, well, that's not what I do. So she declined to do it. Mm-hmm. So we went back and forth 3 or 4 days. And finally, you know, I think just to get me out of her hair, she said, okay, send me some. Right. So I sent her some of the love notes and then I gave her the history. At the time, we were calling them love notes from Maggie. I explained why Maggie, what Maggie meant. And the next day, I get an email from her, Omar. And she says, Joseph, I have to tell you something. Mm-hmm. I love the love notes. I love the love notes. But I have to tell you, everybody knows me as Angelina. Because that's the name my father gave me. But when I was growing up, everybody called me by my middle name, Magdalena. And my very best friends, only my very best friends called me Maggie. I said, wait a minute. Because I wanted to confirm this. I said, now Maggie's not a nickname for Magdalena, is it? She said, no, it's not. Somebody called me Maggie. I liked it. And it kind of stuck between me and my best friends. Well, I looked down at her name at that time. I mean, this is so vivid. And I realized I knew it was Angelina, but then I looked at it and then I took it apart. It was Angelina. And I thought, oh my God, this must be an angel from Maggie about the burning bush. And then, well, you know, we corresponded, we kept corresponding, became kind of friends. And about a month later, I guess she was more comfortable with me. I got this email and she goes, the same as the first one, she goes, Joseph, I have to tell you something. That Angelina is the name my father wanted to name me. But my mother wanted to name me Maria. And it's on my birth certificate. My name is Maria Magdalena. And she goes, now, I know you're not going to believe that. You're not going to believe me. So she sent me a copy of her passport. Her name is Mary Magdalene. And her nickname growing up was Maggie. So I thought, oh, my God, out of the thousands of people I could have picked, I picked only one. I picked her. The only thing I knew about her was her name was Angelina. And then it comes out to be this. That's my burning bush. So the power of the angels, my new book, the Power of the Angels, what it talks about, Omar, is doubt and fear. You know, most of us, we have choices every day to make. And when it comes down to it, there's only two choices, fear or doubt. Fear, doubt, you know, those are the same thing, or love. And, you know, if you don't know what your life purpose is, if you don't have any meaning in your life, if you feel like you're in a dead-end job, if you're broke, you know, if you're unhappy, I believe that's because we make the wrong choices. We make the choices based out of fear rather than love. And this book, The Power of Angels, is actually volume 3 of a 6-volume series. And the series title is Loving Yourself Wealthy. And wealthy means in all aspects of your life. And people don't do that. They wake up, they're in their head, and they start making choices based on fear rather than love because they're in their head. They're listening to their monkey mind. And, you know, like I just described, the monkey mind is going to tell you anything it wants, you know, to stay in control. And so that's what the book, you know, emphasizes, is we're always going to have doubt, you know. I mean, I had doubt. Doubts crept in last year again. Now, you would think, right? You would think after having a burning bush that I got, I wouldn't doubt again. But that's not how the ego works. The ego is always going to create some kind of doubt. And last year, not like originally, but a little bit of doubt started creeping in. And so the next morning, Maggie tells me, look up the meaning of Migdalia. I thought, Migdalia? Mm-hmm. Well, Omar, and when I was in my first year of college in 1968, it was a new school. I didn't have any friends. But the one friend I had was a Mexican lady. She would drive across the border every morning with her four friends to attend classes. And her name was Migdalia. And she, now, you know, my major was anthropology. So she looked like an Aztec princess. I mean, if you put her in a crowd, she'd stand out. She had long, black, straight hair that looked like silk that went past, went down past her buttock. She had this Aztec nose, this regal nose. I mean, she just looked like a princess. And for some reason, she took a liking to me. And we never had classes together. She was an art major. I was an anthropology major. But between classes, if she saw me, she'd always come over and just spend the time, her free time with me. And then they were drafting everybody into the Vietnam War, including students. So, and to avoid getting drafted, I enlisted, and I never saw her again. Mm. So last year, when I'm doubting, Maggie says, look up the meaning of Migdalia. So I look it up, and it meant flower. And I thought, well, yeah, okay, she was like a flower. So the next day, Maggie says, look it up again. I said, but I looked it up. She said, look it up again and use a different source. So I used a different dictionary, and it says Migdalia, derivative of Magdalena.
Hmm.
And I thought, wow. And the reason that's important, Omar, is because the last time I saw Migdalia, I was walking across the parking lot. She was in her friend's car in the rear right seat. She didn't see me. They were driving away, but her girlfriend saw me. And she whispered something to Migdalia. Migdalia turned completely around with this great big smile on her face and waved to me. That was the last time I saw her. I then went into the Army, and then they sent me to Vietnam. And I was in an intelligence unit. But when you get to Vietnam, you know, in the Saigon, that's where you stay for a few days until your paperwork comes through. And then you go to your duty station. Well, everybody knows you're new because, you know, you look brand new. And so all the South Vietnamese, every time they would ask me, well, where are you going from Saigon? I said, I'm going to play coup. And every single one I said that to, they go, oh, no, that's the worst place you can go. That place is crawling with Viet Cong and North Vietnamese. And I'm thinking, well, thanks a lot, you know, but that's where I'm going. Well, I got to play coup May 1969 to May 70, the whole year I was there. We never got hit. Now, they knew what we were doing. We had antennas all over the place. We were intercepting the communications from the commanders in the north to their armies in the south. And so everything was top secret. We worked in units that were on trucks. So if we ever got overrun, the trucks could be heading out and we could be destroying everything inside these units. Well, for the whole year, we were never hit. The airbase next to us got hit almost on a weekly basis. I know, because when they got hit, we had to go on alert. But we never took any incoming. Well, in May 1970, after being a year there, it was my time to come home. I flew down to Saigon to wait for my paperwork. While I was there, I got word that the unit I worked in took a direct hit. Three of my friends who I worked side by side with were killed.
Mm.
Now, I know that when Migdalia, when the last time I saw Migdalia and she was smiling and waving goodbye to me, that was Maggie telling me that I was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
As Steve Jobs said, you can't connect the dots when you're in the midst of it. But after, when you look back, then you can connect those dots. And that's when I was doubting last year. That's what Maggie was telling me. Said, look up Migdalia. That was me going through Migdalia, telling you that you were going to be okay. But I couldn't see it at the time. But that's what I call my angel interventions, you know. And people ask me, well, okay, you've had these angel interventions, but how do you do that? All I can tell your listeners is, when I first had that blessing from Mother Mary, I wasn't expecting that at all. But I've always been open. I've always had an open mind. And, Anita Morjani has a great book called Dying to Be Me, and where she had stage 4 terminal cancer, and she had this near-death experience and cured herself. But people that have asked her, well, how do you get into that state where you were before? And she has the greatest answer. She says, well, you have to suspend all dogma and doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get that. That's how you have these angel interventions. And that's what I've always done without really knowing it. My mother was first generation Irish Catholic, right? I mean, I have a pretty good background in Catholicism, Irish Catholicism, but I've always been able just to let that dogma and doctrine go, and just be open to what's available from the universe. So I'm not a religious person. I am a spiritual person. And I might say that all these interactions with Mary and Maggie have always been from a spiritual perspective, never a religious thing, because, of course, they were disciples of Jesus. And, of course, Jesus, that was his thing. He told everybody to, that's why they crucified him, right? Because he told everybody to, in this dogma and doctrine, but that's my advice for your listeners, is just to be open and expect miracles every day, as Wayne Dyer says, right? Miracles happen every day, so be ready and willing. So I get up, one of my routines in the morning, we all wake up and we're mostly in our heads right away, right? And I am too. I wake up, I'm usually in my head, but what I do is I use my ego, my monkey mind. That's what's why I'm in my head. I thank it. I used to fight with my ego. I used to fight with my monkey mind. And guess who wins when you do that, right? So instead of fighting, now I've befriended it. It's a friend now. So when I realize I'm in my head, I thank it for reminding me to drop into my heart. And so when I wake up in the morning, I'm usually in my head. I just thank it. I drop into my heart. and then I listen. Now, this is after I get up. I'm usually up around 2 a.m. Transcribing the love notes, and then I go back to bed around 4, and then I wake up again maybe around 7, sometimes 8, and then it's when I wake up then, around 7 or 8, that's usually when I'm in my head, and then I drop into my heart, and then I just listen. Stewart has a great song called The Rhythm of Your Heart, and I listen to that. I try and listen to it every day. Because it's just, you just need these things to, whatever works for you to keep you in your heart. And if you can stay in your heart, out of your head, you know, you're going to be open to seeing the miracles and the angel interventions that come into your life. But even with the angel interventions, you know, you still have a choice. You know, you can listen to it or you can ignore it. So, and that's where we come. Making a choice, right? We have a choice. Choose love or choose fear, right? There's only two choices on everything we choose to do every day. That's only two, love or fear. So, now, granted, when you first start, when your listeners first start doing this, you're going to be choosing fear most of the time. That's okay. Don't beat yourself up. Just say, okay, I chose fear. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me to choose love and go back and make the decision based on love. And then the more you do that, the more time, then you start choosing love more and more and more. And eventually you're choosing love most of the time. But remember, the monkey mind always wants to be in control. So it's never 100% of the time. So instead of fighting it, just befriend it. And every time you see that it's, controlling your decisions, just thank it for helping you, for reminding you to go back and make decisions from your heart.
Mm-hmm. Now, what you're going through is very profound. So I think most people don't have the access that you have. Like, did this always, these type of experience always happen to you? And specifically, if we assume that people do have difficulties with the idea of this angel intervention in such a profound way, like, is intuition an easier entryway to this type of thought?
Well, intuition is your angels talking to you. So angels and intuition, it's the same thing. Right. Mm-hmm. But I call it angels because I've seen them. Right. And
right.
Well, I'll give you, if we have time real briefly, I had a doubt. My monkey mind started throwing in some doubts a few months ago in my head. And so the next day, Maggie tells me to Google Carlos Castaneda. If you know who Carlos Castaneda is, right? He wrote the Don Juan series of books back in the 60s, Don Juan, the Yaqui Way of Knowledge. Well, there's always been controversy around those books. His critics say that he made everything up, that there is no Don Juan, Don Juan Matus, the shaman in Mexico. And Carlos always maintained that, look, I met Don Juan. The first time I met Don Juan Matus was at the Greyhound bus station in Nogales, Arizona. Well, okay, let's go back to when my great-great uncle is Grady Gamage. He is the founder and first president of Arizona State University at Tempe. That's on my father's side. Every summer, we would go back to visit my relatives in the Phoenix area. And coming home, we'd always stop at different places. And I cannot tell you any places I stopped at, of all the places except Nogales, Arizona. Both my parents are deceased. I have no idea why we ever stopped there. But the only reason I remember is two things happened to me there. Now, I was 9 years old. I was laying in the bed in the motel, and this wave of grace flowed through me, as if somebody was just embracing me with their loving arms. I didn't know what to think about it. It felt great, but I was 9 years old. I didn't know. And the other time was we were in Nogales. We were waiting to cross the street. We were waiting for the light to change. And the same thing happened to me then while we were waiting on the street. That's the only reason I remember Nogales. Well, Matt, when I'm doubting a few months ago, Maggie tells me, Google Carlos Castaneda. So I know quite a bit about him already, but I was just reading. And then on the sidebar, there was a link to an article by a fellow who said he can confirm the meeting at the Greyhound bus station because he was there. And I never heard of this writer, so I clicked on it. And he's saying, yes, I was at the meeting between Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan Matus at the Greyhound bus station in Nogales, Arizona. Now, I would have missed that meeting, except for the fact that I got terribly sick when I was traveling in Mexico. And so I waited 2 weeks in a little town right across the border from Nogales to recuperate. And if I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have been at the bus station when they were there. Well, the name of the town right across the border from Nogales that he recuperated in is Magdalena.
Oh, man.
Now, that's what happens when I start doubting now, because, you know, after that burning bush, I think she's just, rolling her eyes, not again.
Yeah, no,
and so
absolutely.
she gives me these clues to solidify my faith. But, I'm no different than anybody else. We all have doubts, and you just got to be open to, like Wayne Dyer said, miracles happen in a moment. Be ready and willing. All right. You just have to be ready, and you have to be willing, and you have to be that first before the miracles come. All right. But once you're ready and you're willing, then these angel interventions show up in your life. Now, the other thing on this third volume, because between the third volume and the first volume, people were saying, well, that's great. You can see your angels, but, I can't. And so what am I going to do? And so in the third volume, in the introduction, Maggie told me to write. She said, I want you to tell everybody that whoever comes across these love notes, whether it's in the library or, if you go to my website, lovenotesforyoursoul.com, you can sign up for delivery of free love notes once a week if you want. However you come across these love notes, she says, tell the people that however they come across them, once they come across them, they can know that Mary Magdalene is one of their guiding angels.
Mm.
So that's the significance of volume three, is that she didn't do that in the first two volumes. Right. And I think that gives some solace to people that, so in other words, if I didn't know anything about this, I was in a bookstore and I came across the book and I opened it and read it. Even if I don't buy the book, if I read it, she's saying that's right there. That's I have adopted that person, and I am from that point on their guardian angel. Yeah. So.
Yeah, because I do think that's a good way to introduce this idea. Because again, I know that a lot of people don't have the gift that you have of actually seeing these kinds of things. So, it's definitely difficult for a lot of people to grasp this. So I'm thinking, what are some tips on how we can faithfully trust that part of, our lives, call it intuition or into intervention?
How do you trust your intuition and take action on it? When I had my first business, I had a lot of trouble because, I opened the business and then instead of following my intuition, I would, I better go to a seminar by this guy who says he's really successful and I'll just follow his method, right? And then I do things, it just wasn't my cup of tea, but I do them anyway, right? Oh, it just backfired on me, right? So when you follow your intuition, it's going to feel really good. And now the key is, when you get an intuitive hit, you got to take action immediately. If you don't, if you wait a day or two or three, your ego, your monkey mind, will talk you out of it. So that's the key. Once you get that intuitive feeling, you got to act on it. Well, you don't have to. I mean, again, it's a choice, right? You choose either fear or you choose love. So make the decision based on love, on loving yourself, right? Loving yourself wealthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. It might seem scary. You might think, well, you know, how's that ever going to, you know, come to fruition? Well, it doesn't matter. You don't need to know the how. All your job is to listen and take action.
Right.
And once you start doing that, Omar, once you start doing that and you do it more and more and more, I can't guarantee it, but I would bet that you start seeing angels appearing in your life. But there's other factors involved too, you know, like belief and things like that. But once you get on that road, you know, I call it your road to Rome. You know, your role mm-hmm. is your purpose, your whatever. Once you get on your road to Rome, once you start walking, and then a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't know my purpose. How am I going to, you know, you don't have to know your purpose. All you have to do is listen to your intuition and take action. Taking action means beginning the walk on your road to Rome. So as you begin walking your road to Rome, will be shown to you. A lot of times it's not, you don't know it until you start taking the action.
Right. And I guess today, nowadays, you know, everybody's obviously looking for that instant gratification. So they don't really acknowledge the obvious, like with that action, because it's, if I don't get it in a week, whatever this action is, they might turn around.
Right. Well, you know, when I first asked Maggie to give me a burning bush, you know, that was in March, and it wasn't until July that she answered me. So, you know, it is magical, but it's also mysterious. We don't understand, you know, why was there a wait from March to July? Well, I don't know. Maybe Angelina wasn't available. I don't know. I have no idea. But we don't need to know. All we need to do is listen to our angels, listen to our intuition, take action, and be ready and willing for the miracles that show up.
That makes sense.
I mean, it's pretty simple, but if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And
Yep.
So you just have to start. That was the great thing about Paulo Coelho, you know, before he wrote The Alchemist. You know, he went on the 500-mile walk, the Camino de Santiago de Compostela in northern Spain. That walk, and that was his road to Rome, right? After that walk, that 500-mile walk, he wrote The Alchemist. Up until that time, he was struggling. He was struggling to become known as an author. And then even after publishing The Alchemist, it failed. The publisher gave it back to him. He kept knocking on doors. He found an American publisher because, you know, he's from Brazil. It was originally published in Brazil. 10 years. It took 10 years for it to become a bestseller.
Yeah.
You know. Now, why didn't it take a year, if it's such a great book, right? Why didn't it take a year? Why didn't it take 6 months? Yeah, but we don't know these things. We don't know why. What we can do, Omar, the very basic thing we can do every morning is to drop into our hearts, listen to the rhythm of our heart, and then make conscious decisions based on love.
Right.
That's the very basic we can do. And that's easy. Anybody can do that. But then you have to listen and take action. And you have to take that action in faith. Right? Because right. a lot of times, you never see the outcome. I mean, Edmund Hillary, right? The first known person to climb Mount Everest, right? He was a beekeeper from New Zealand. You know, when he told people that he was going to climb Mount Everest, they said, are you crazy? You're a beekeeper. You don't know anything about climbing mountains. He didn't have to, right? That's why Henry Ford, right? When Henry Ford was on a testifying at a trial, because he didn't have a high school education, the attorney was trying to embarrass him. He says, well, you don't know this, you don't know that. He says, and finally, Ford stopped him, and he looked at him and says, look, if I want to know something, I'll hire somebody to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Edmund Hillary did. He didn't know how to climb mountains. He's a beekeeper. But because he didn't know how it was going to be done, but he had the vision and he held the vision and he listened to his intuition and he took action every day, just baby steps every day. The people he needed to make it happen came to him. And people think, well, you know, if I have a purpose, I have to take this massive action. He says, no. Lao Tzu, right, said that the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. All you have to do is start walking, taking baby steps, right? Teddy Roosevelt said that, right? He said, just do what you can from where you are with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's the key to the life of success. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Do what you can with what you have from where you are, taking baby steps. Keep going. Keep taking the baby steps, and the path will open up to you. Right? Well, Jack Canfield has a great analogy in The Secret, right? He's talking about driving cross country, right, at night, and your headlights shine about, 300 feet ahead, right? But that's all you can see. You can't see beyond that. But you don't stop because you can't see beyond it, right? You know what your destination is, so you keep driving. And so you keep being able to as you go forward, as you're walking your road to Rome, it opens up to you. The road opens up to you. And that's a great analogy because that's exactly what happens. But most people, choose fear. Most people who get on the road get scared and stop.
Absolutely. A lot of quitting nowadays.
And that's in this generation. You see people like Michael Jordan, and you don't see what got him there. All you see is the superstar, right? And he's the first one to tell you, right, that he did quit. He got eliminated from his varsity basketball team, and he quit.
Right.
His coach got a hold of him and worked with him. And he says, you know why I'm a superstar? He says, because I failed more than anybody else on the team or in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He says, I've tried more shots than anybody else. Right. And I failed. It's like Babe Ruth, right? We see Babe Ruth as home run king. But people don't know that when he was alive, they also called him the strikeout king. He led the league in striking out. But he told people, he said, look, the only reason I'm the home run king is because I strike out more than anybody else. He says, I just try more than anybody else. He says, but people don't know him as a strikeout king. We know him as a home run king, but in his day, he was known as both. And the nice thing is when you listen to your angels, your intuition, and you start taking your baby steps, Paulo Coelho said it. He said, the secret to life is the old Zen proverb, fall down 7 times, get up 8 times. Right. Oh, you just have to keep going. You know, when Paulo Coelho started on the Camino de Santiago, it took him 3 days to walk what everybody else was walking in one day because he hated it. He thought that it was stupid because somebody had advised him to do it. And he thought that was the stupidest thing. He kept complaining every day. But he said something magical happened after the third day. And he just kept walking. And he had angel interventions. You know, if you read his book, you know, he had angel interventions on that walk.
Right.
So it's not easy. It's not easy, so to speak. But that, if it's not easy, that's because you're looking at your obstacles as obstacles, right? And Thomas Edison, you know, it took him 10,001 attempts to finally invent the light bulb. He said, well, he never failed once. Every time it didn't work, he just knew what didn't work. That's all he knew. So he knew not to do that again, right? But it took him 10,001 attempts to finally get the light bulb. You know, and you know what he would do? He was well known for this. He would go out, you know, in Florida, he had a lake behind his home, and he'd go out on the lake. And he'd always come back without any fish. And one day, a neighbor boy asked him, he said, well, Mr. Edison, how come you never bring back any fish? He says, well, I'm not fishing for those fish. He would go out on the boat and ask questions to the universe, and then he would wait for the answers. Oh, answers, wow. Being,
yeah, I didn't know that about him.
His angels, his intuition. Those how the, that's how the answers came to him. Right. So this isn't New Age stuff. It's not. It's been done by the great people all through history.
Right. Yeah. No.
Wayne
absolutely.
Somebody asked Wayne Dyer or Michael. Well, let's use Michelangelo. Somebody asked Michelangelo, "Where's this creativity come from?" And he said, "Well, it doesn't come from me."
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Dyer said,
"Yeah, yeah, absolutely."
Thing. Wayne said, "I don't write any books. Source writes the books. I'm just a conduit."
Yeah, no, that's a
big
thing.
And if you know Wayne, you know Wayne's story, right? If you know Wayne's story, you know, he had to have a tremendous amount of faith, and he had to listen to his angels, and make the choices based on love and not on fear.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, to bring it, wind it down. Just you know, just befriend your monkey mind, befriend your ego. Don't fight it. When you realize that you're in your head, thank your monkey mind for reminding you to drop into your heart. Listen to the rhythm of your heart as Rod Stewart sings. And when you catch yourself making decisions based on fear, don't beat yourself up. Just say, thank you, fear. Thank you, my monkey mind, for reminding me. My heart, listen to the rhythm of my heart. And start making decisions again based on love.
Right,
it's just
right.
A process, and the more you do it, the better you get at it. That's all, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So,
They can go to my website. It's lovenotesforyoursoul.com. They can email me at joseph@loveyourselfwealthy.com. Or if they're interested in getting the paperback of The Power of Angels, they can get that through my direct link. It's josephconfidential.com. And if they want the digital copy of the Power of Angels, they can get that through my website, Love Notes for Your Soul, at a special discount.
Oh, that's great. No, definitely thank you for this opportunity to get to know you. And definitely I recommend to get this book because it definitely was really a nice, easy read with some nice commentary to help us on the track of getting introduced to our angels. And I think it's going to help a lot of people because I know that this is something that a lot of people really are interested in kind of fine tuning. I know that a lot of people aren't going to have the profound experiences that you have with the visualization, but we can absolutely get in tune with ourselves, get our angels talking to us in whatever way that we are able to interpret it.
Right, exactly. It doesn't have to be like I do it. I'm a very visual person. But if somebody's auditory, You know, they can hear it. Just be open. Suspend your dogma, your doctrine, your beliefs. Just suspend it all. And be ready and willing. So the miracles being your angels coming to you, they're there already. You're just not listening to them. Just like Migdalia was there in 1968, waving goodbye to me. Well, that was Maggie, and I didn't know it, you know.
Right.
So they're always there. It's just that you have to come to the point where you start becoming aware of them. And
absolutely.
That's just practice. You just practice doing it. Okay.
Yeah, no, for
well,
sure.
This has been a real pleasure.
All right.
For I appreciate you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm
having this available for people.
No, yeah, thank you. Appreciate
that. Yeah, okay.
All right, Joseph, you have a great night. And again, thank you for appearing on our show. And I definitely want the audience to get in touch with you. Thanks for that information. And you have a great night.
All right. Thank you, Omar. Good night.
Thank you.